This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, April 24th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. How should the government spend federal dollars on security? The Transportation Security Administration is one area worthy of cutting. So says John Mueller, senior fellow at the Cato Institute and co-author of the forthcoming book, Are We Safe Enough? Donald Trump, in addition to being a master showman, and maybe these are two peas in the same pod, is also a master of threat inflation and making certain threats appear to be much greater than they actually are. If you look at the – if you do the math on your likelihood of being affected by some specific act, and your work has a lot to do with making sure that we understand what the actual risks are and trying to behave in a rational way rather than in a way that is merely an emotional reaction. So what do you make of how he has performed thus far?
Well, it's been pretty incoherent, which doesn't make it unusual, I guess. So he said consistently incoherent. What was impressive was the budget blueprint that came out just a few weeks ago. And they had actually been willing to really look at the Department of Homeland Security budget, including the Transportation Security Administration budget, and see about cutting it. So I give them some points for at least, taking on sacred cows. But they did it so incoherently and so foolishly that totally unconvincing. Basically, Mark Stewart and I just finished a book which will be out later this year called Are We Safe Enough? And it's focused on airline security, so we've been spending a lot of time basically looking at it. And what you want to do in that case is deal with a whole series of layers of security. And it basically hasn't been done consistently. For example, the Washington Post reported a former TSA administrator saying, well, every layer is important and contributes, so therefore we have to have them all. Well, that's basically nonsense. I mean, basically, you want security, obviously. Some layers are unquestionably better than others. Some layers are also cheaper than others. And what you want to do is emphasize the cheap and good and de-emphasize the expensive and not very bad. Everyone is correct that everyone contributes to security. It's not – if you have a layer which actually reduces your security, then obviously that's a bit of a no-brainer. It's not worth spending any money on at all. But they all probably do contribute a little bit. So what we've done is gone through all the layers of security and try to assess the ones that seem to be to the degree which they were effective at reducing risk, and then comparing that to their costs. So essentially, cost-benefit analysis, risk analysis, from the get-go, looks at it from that way. It's a standard thing.
So what do we know?
And it's appalling. Basically, they haven't done that, nor has TSA without the Trump people being there.
What do we know about these layers of security, and what contributes what?
Well, first of all, what you need is try to get their cost, and that is not easy all the time, but fairly straightforward. And then you start estimating how much they probably reduce the risk. You can come up with these sort of yardsticks, rough estimates, and you can play around with them. If you basically say this will – it probably reduces the chance of a successful hijacking by 5% or 10% or something like that. And then when you're through, you can say, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe it's 20% or 30% or only 2%, in which case then if you still get the same answer, you're pretty confident about it. So that's basically what we've done. And when you do that – what you find is some layers are stupendously expensive. The most egregious case of that is the federal air marshals, which cost pretty much $1 billion a year, particularly if you include the costs that the airlines have to put in for giving them first-class seats. And the Trump budget didn't even look at them. That's by far the thing. Really, you don't have to go in very deep before you see that jumping out at you. How do they spend $1 billion basically having people fly free on airplanes and scheduling them so they fly from one place to another? There's a few thousand of them. You think you could do it in your bedroom with a scheduling thing on your computer. And said they spent about $1 billion on it, which is really impressive. And of course, the air marshals haven't caught any terrorists at all, or whatever, in their lengthy period of history. And then there are other layers, such as the federal, such as the FFD, the flight deck officers, which are really cheap. Unlike the air marshals, pilots are on every plane. At least I'd never flown on a plane, didn't have a pilot, and I think that's a safe estimate. So they're always going to be there. So one thing is these guys really give a damn, obviously, about what's going on. And if somebody tries to hijack their plane, they're likely to be, to say the least, exercised, both in the sense that their sense of duty has been tromped on, and plus, obviously, that the people get killed. The pilots really like the program. They want to do it. They want to be able to defend themselves and defend their airplane. I think that, you know, they take sort of a paternalistic or sea captain view. You know, you do have hundreds of people who are under their control. Everybody puts their safety into the hands of the flight deck crew. Consequently, they obviously take it seriously, and fortunately that, you know, should, obviously. To train these guys to basically defend the cockpit is pretty cheap. And furthermore, in much of the training, they're willing to pay for themselves. They really want to do it. So what you've got is a very effective layer of security, one that's likely to be extremely good, particularly against hijackings. It's no good against, obviously, bomb threats, but against hijackings would be very good. And it costs very little. Another layer, which is essentially free, is crew and cabin crew resistance, passenger resistance. You can pretty much count on the passengers without having to pick up a nickel and without any training at all to really risk a lot to stop a hijacking, because they know if the hijackers are successful, they're going to be dead. So consequently, their mind is obviously going to be, to say the least, concentrated. So what you've got is a layer, sets of those things. And what the Trump administration did was it initially was going to try to reduce the federal air marshals program, which is relatively inexpensive. And it didn't pay any attention whatsoever to the air marshals. Then it played around with a couple of other programs, which were somewhat questionable. The thing that they call the Viper teams, which is a bunch of basic groups of people who go around trying to coordinate to try to find terrorists, you know, basically in the airport.
Which they sometimes arrest at the end of a train ride.
Yeah, right, yes.
Whereas it would seem to be more useful to intercept them before the train ride.
Yeah, that's right. That's the idea, basically. They also basically haven't done much of anything. And also the behavioral detection officers, which are people trained to detect people who look shifty-eyed and so forth. And they're very incredibly expensive in that case. They're not as expensive as the air marshals. So they were looking at a couple programs that could definitely be cut, but they're ignoring the big elephant and trying and thinking about cutting an extremely effective and extremely inexpensive program. So they, and I must say, you know, as I mentioned in passing earlier, TSA has not done much better. And that's sort of a scandal, it seems to me. I mean, everybody, if you read Hawley's book, who was the first administrator of TSA, which he calls Permanent Emergency, which is kind of a depressing title, I must say, but he really believes it. He was there at the get-go, and they were slinging money into airplanes. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing after 9/11, and that's obviously perfectly understandable. I mean, you just sort of panic, and you're in panic mode for a while. Well, you might do that, you know, if there's a bunch of burglaries on your block, you might also, you know, invest a lot in burglar alarms and hiring bodyguards or whatever, and sort of overspend. But after a couple of years, you as a person or you in your business, for example, say, you know, I was through a lot of that money in panic. Some of it might have, it was probably pretty well spent by sheer luck, and some of it wasn't. And you expect any normal person after a few years, certainly, would go back and say, I ought to reevaluate that. Do I really need that burglar alarm? Do I really need a full-time bodyguard? You know, whatever.
The salience.
It's costing me a lot of money, and they may be doing some. They all do some good, but the question is, do enough good to justify their cost?
That salience of the moment is gone.
Yeah, that's right. And so I don't fault them for sort of panicking after 9/11. I think they would all agree that the panic was not justified overall. It was not, you know, there's never been a terrorist attack either before or after 9/11 or in war zones or outside war zones that has visited even about 10% of as much destruction as 9/11. So it's very much an outlier. But anyway, who knew that at the time? You know, maybe this is going to be the start of another. So they do it. But basically, after time, you sort of calm down and you try to say, you know, some of that money is well spent and some of it wasn't. And logically, you try to, you know, take the money from the inexpensive, not very good programs to the ones that are cheaper and better.
In trying to calculate risks and trying to assess which levels of security ought to receive be promoted versus demoted in terms of what we use to protect ourselves and airlines from terrorism, terrorist incidents are fairly rare.
Indeed.
So can we say that the totality of whatever we have is good enough to deter many of these incidents, and the totality of what we have is good enough to stop most of these incidents in their tracks for people who are not deterred?
Yeah, well, it's relatively easy in the airline industry as opposed to somebody shooting up a football game or something like that. And it's extremely likely that people have been deterred from attacking airplanes because of the security measures. But on the other hand, there hasn't been much terrorism anywhere. And so if it is the case that they've been deterred from, if there are a whole lot of people out there who really do damage, and you say, and they look at airplanes and say, nah, that's really too hard. The number of targets that exist, you know, like a gay nightclub in Orlando or something like that, or a terrible tragedy. There's how many places like that are in the country? Millions, thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands. So it's probably the case that they have been deterred quite well from certain targets. But the fact that they haven't been displaced and are showing up elsewhere sort of suggests that just possibly they don't exist. So Mark and I did a book last year called 2016 called Chasing Ghosts, which sort of looks at the incredible task of going after all these people who mostly don't prove to be anything. For example, the FBI has chased down at least 10 million, maybe closer to 20 million leads since 9/11 on terrorism. And the number of those, we know how many have led to something because there have been arrests or there'd be something, you know, coming out of that. The numbers that have led to much of anything is very small, maybe a few hundred. And of those, the vast majority are pretty pathetic. I mean, there were guys who were really thinking about doing something bad, but that's about all they were doing is thinking and not likely ever to carry it out.
People who the FBI in many cases helped significantly in terms of the providing them not just the apparent means, what looked like means to those people, but even sort of egged them along.
Yeah, the most plots that have been brought together have had FBI informants in them. In other words, it's not they haven't just surveilled people they thought might do it, but they've actually infiltrated agents or operatives into the plot itself. So there's a case, for example, about 2 years ago in Rochester, New York. There was a panhandler who was down on his luck and everything else. He tried to commit suicide quite a few times, and he's only 26 years old, but he spent the last 10 years of his life almost entirely in jail for various elements of pretty petty crime. And he got the jihadist thing. He converted to Islam in prison because they thought it would protect him from being raped, for example. He thought he'd be really cool to be able to join ISIS, and he got in touch with somebody in ISIS and said, yeah, go do some terrorism or something. That'll show you, and then sort of an entry fee and so forth. So with the usual lack of subtlety of these guys, he started advertising on Facebook. The FBI immediately picked that up, and pretty soon he found himself to be at the center of a cell of four people. The other three were all FBI informants. So that's really not terribly unusual. 3-to-1 is a little bit high. It's usually more closer to 2-to-1. But it's basically you get these pathetic people who are sort of out of it. In his case, he was also had mental problems and was mentally ill and was not taking his medication. That also is becoming increasingly common. And then the FBI agents start, you know, encouraging them and joining in.
Are the assessments ever made of what the security gains are of having FBI agents sort of spend, in some cases, months egging these guys along and devoting the resources to basically getting a guy to click a button at one point and say, now we got him?
Yeah. They're very high. In fact, it's not frequently not months, but years. And you have to pay the operatives. You have to pay the people who marshal the operatives. You have to pay secretaries and stuff to take down notes and everything and accumulate evidence. And the informants are frequently really pretty clever people. They're basically con artists because they're playing a role, obviously. It's a tricky one because they're dealing with someone who's thinking about killing people. Therefore, you're dealing with a potential murderer, and therefore, if he thinks that you're selling him out, he might murder you. So it's a serious thing. Violence has never happened. There's been places where people got suspicious of the informants and so forth, but they've not had problems. But anyway, you have to pay all those people. And also, everybody, I think, who looks at these cases in detail, you say, would these guys have done anything if you just let them, just let them go? And in general, what you'd conclude is, not very many of them. They're sort of incompetent. They're sort of incoherent, and they're inadequate in just about every way. So the total number of people who have been killed by terrorists and Islamist terrorists in the United States is about 6 per year since 9/11. I had a friend of mine who works is sort of high up in the National Institutes of Health, and I asked him once, suppose you had a disease that killed 6 people every year, how much money would you spend on trying to eradicate it? And he looked back at me like I was totally crazy. I mean, it just that kind of, you got diseases killing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. It's ludicrous to think about it in those terms. So then the question is, okay, we caught there's a whole bunch of people we caught. And if they had been let on their own, we know how much the people that we didn't catch killed, namely about 6 per year. And you would come out with a very small number, maybe 12 per year if these people hadn't been caught, maybe 20 per year. I mean, you're still not dealing with a very significant number. Any death is tragic, of course. But those are, the amount of resources you want to put into that kind of thing. That kind of hazard is pretty limited when there's, far more people die drowning in bathtubs and things. Certainly from things like the drug, the number of people who die each day in Ohio from drug overdoses is 7 or is 9. In other words, more than for a whole year by terrorists. And that's just Ohio. There's a lot of problems out there. And the question is this one big enough to cause the FBI, for example, to spend $3 billion a year on it? And it's a very, very questionable expenditure.
John Mueller is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute and co-author of the forthcoming book, Are We Safe Enough? Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.